This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Are we in wave one or wave two? If there is a lull, does that mark an end, a pause, or gathering of strength? These questions we ask about coronavirus. But what if we understood social movement moments in the same way? The death of George Floyd and the uprisings that followed can seem like the birth of a new social movement and a new host of possibilities. Disbanding and defunding police departments, commemorating Juneteenth, and addressing the ongoing silent apartheid, the systemic racism woven through the society in everything from voting rights to health care to urban planning. It seems as sudden as a lightning strike. Alan Kwabena Frimpong is an activist and consultant with Ad Astra Collective, which provides tools to build social movements. He says the explosion was ignited by what his group calls a trigger event, or several of them.
The killing of George Floyd, the pandemic, the previous extrajudicial killings of Black people, these events where we can no longer be complicit with the conditions of the status quo that we're in.
And then once the triggering event unleashes this long accumulating rage, comes the heroic phase. Everybody's on the streets. Anything seems possible. Which leads, you say, to a honeymoon.
Right. People believe anything is possible that we've been dreaming of, that we would like to see in our world. A future without police, without jails and prisons. Now that not only seems possible, it's becoming possible. And so we saw that with the disbandment of the Minneapolis Police Department, with the vote that was taken by the city council. And so it's in this space that possibility can live.
And then history tells us the honeymoon inevitably ends, leading to disillusionment, contraction, you call it. The Women's March and Occupy are quintessential examples. And likewise, the first wave of Black Lives Matter. What's happening when the disillusionment sets in?
Many times during this period, we think we've failed. That when the cameras turn off, when there's not as much attention to the issues in mass media or even in social media, we think that the movement activity has somehow ended, but it hasn't. It's that what is required of us has shifted, or it gets to shift in this phase of the cycle. And it's a time to build strategy and to build organization, to find unity around the issues and to figure out the infrastructure needed to be able to create the visions of the world that we actually want to live in.
An analogy might be that you light the grill, the flames jump out of the kettle so big you could get singed, but then 15 minutes later you come back and all you see is a heap of coals. But underneath, it is smoldering. The cycle does seem to reflect at least American history going back to the Boston Tea Party.
These kind of waves that we've seen, this country has dealt with since its inception. When you invoke the Boston Tea Party, that history occurred with the backdrop of slavery and the removal of indigenous folks. We have to understand there are waves of rebellions and riots. I'm here in Jersey City, New Jersey. In 1884, you had Black people rioting here in Newark because of the erection of what was then the school system and how Black people were being locked out of participation. there are these strings of events in our history that lead to these moments.
So let's call this the second wave of Black Lives Matter. Does the same pattern still hold? I mean, if this is the second honeymoon, should we expect marital reality to kick in with a second loss of energy?
Why wouldn't we? We still live in a culture that upholds capitalism and that holds white supremacy. The fact that we have people still talking about the reform of a police state, I think, is indicative of that. What feels different in this case is now you have corporations who want to put out statements saying Black Lives Matter. So yeah, we're in, if you want to call it, a second wave of Black Lives Matter. But the reality is that, as we've talked about before in the contraction phase, we really will have to ask the deep question, what will be required of us as organizers, activists, members of our communities to shift the material conditions?
Are you in the process of trying to manage expectations, show how the cycle works, and say, we're not going to lead the news for much longer? Be prepared to build networks and continue to organize, continue to lobby.
What we will need to deal with in this contraction phase is what are going to be the alternative institutions that people can look to, that people can trust, and that people can believe in that shows us the path to the new normal that we deserve. And to me, what that looks like is worker-owned cooperatives, credit unions, community control of our public safety, healthcare for all, public education accessible to all. Those things would need to change if we're asking for the abolishment of police, because what it requires of us then is to change our relationships with each other and build community with each other. And that's what we're going to need to prepare for as this contraction phase comes to life. And the question becomes, will we choose to do that work? Will we choose to build with people in our neighborhoods? Will we choose to depend on them and create modalities for our safety?
Speaking of other institutions, this show is called On the Media. And I want to ask you about us. And I want to go back to Occupy to do it. When the protesters vanished from the public parks and went home, sometimes chased away by police, we in the media seized on that exodus as a sign of the movement's failure because its goals were too quixotic, its politics too fragmented, and so on. Is the contraction phase of the cycle reflected by or influenced by the media characterizations?
When people are not in the streets anymore and there isn't this huge spectacle, what is there left to cover? America is so infatuated with the spectacle of its own violence and the trauma that ensues from it. The disillusionment in the contraction period of the cycle, I think, is a representation of what we tend to be stuck in terms of our own habits. We enjoy the trauma of the story of the victim, the perpetrator, and the savior, and the way we tell our news as from that habitual norm. And so what would it look like to shift away from that and perhaps tell news that connects the dots and tells a much more nuanced and complex story that the viewers or the listeners deserve to hear, where people can actually share authentic stories about what is going on from a place that is moving for people, that shifts something for them, that doesn't truncate and flatten their lives into just these one-dimensional identities. There's a lot of what media frames and that then leads to some of the assumptions that get made about whatever happened to the marches, whatever happened to the people organizing. The reality is people are still doing that work, but it may look different.
We in the media have focused on the tip of the iceberg, the protests, the violence, the repercussions. But you have been talking of what's going on beneath, the networks of people building power over time, the organization. What do you think we can do to tell the story of protest better?
Folks in media need to ask themselves, why do we feel compelled to tell these stories in these ways? What do we believe about our audience, about what they're ready to hear and what they're ready to listen to? we can then have a conversation about what are the human stories that need to be shared that connect the dots. People think that somehow Minneapolis was just able to do this overnight, but they have been in a protracted struggle for years to get to this point. If media were to tell the stories of what it took to get there, that would be a different kind of conversation that has different kinds of implications. And the time that it would take to tell those stories would mean the focus of the stories is not just around making a profit, but we would actually have to honor people's time and contributions much differently than the ways that we do right now. Are they willing to shift as an industry to live into the kind of lives that these movements are demanding and declaring for?
Alan, thank you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the time being here and just being able to share and be in conversation.
Alan Kwabena Frimpong is an activist and consultant with Ad Astra Collective.